So our question this evening is a significant one in the light of the news stories that we continually see on our TV screens or our computers or iPads or whatever else. From bombings in public places that continue on, like the one in the States not so very long ago, to accusations of race-related victimization, to the destruction of an aid convoy as people tried to bring humanitarian aid in Syria. And unfortunately, we could just go on, couldn't we? Listing story after story after story. Now, we should not lose sight of the beauty and wonder of this world that we live in, but we would also have to close our eyes very tightly indeed to miss the reality of injustice and abuse and oppression, of the reality of evil. And there would be something wrong with us, wouldn't there, if those things did not appall and disturb us. Whilst politicians don't often get our sympathy, it was difficult not to empathise with US Secretary of State John Kerry a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if you remember seeing his statement in the UN, where his anger at what had happened in that aid convoy was thinly veiled beneath a veneer of diplomatic respectability. But you could see he wanted to say so much more than that, at the injustice that had gone on, at this destruction of that convoy. And we felt sympathy for him, and we knew why he was wanting to respond in that way. Evil matters, and we want something to, we think something should be done about it. And so if there is a God, then that someone should be him, shouldn't it? Doesn't God care about evil? Well, the good news is that God does take evil seriously. It does matter to him. And the Bible calls that hell. Hell is separation from all that is good because it is separation from God himself. Hell is God's judgment on evil because he is good. Now, when we start using a term like hell, there are a few different images that probably spring to our minds. One is that hell is actually quite a fun place. It's where the cool kids go. It's the ultimate party capital where there is no frowning and no disapproval and you get on with what you like. Well, that's not the picture of hell in the Bible. How could it be if it's a separation from the source of everything that is good and beautiful and joyous and fun from God himself? And as we think about the question that we're looking at this evening, how could such a place of fun be any kind of judgment of what is evil? If God does care about evil enough to judge it, then hell must be a terrible place. And so it is in the Bible's description, because it is where God is not. But the second thought that comes to mind when hell is mentioned holds that idea that it is indeed a terrible place, but it's one that's reserved for murderers and war criminals and paedophiles. It's the place described by angry and hurting relatives that we see on the steps of the law court after the conviction of someone who has cost them a dearly loved one so early. And we empathize with the anger that we hear from them as they talk about wanting that person to burn in hell. We understand the venom of their words that they speak, because evil is wrong and it deserves judgment. The Bible is very clear, hell is real. But neither of those two ideas of hell actually have much to do with us in the end, do they? The first one we can discount, I think. It's a cartoon idea of hell which has no merit whatsoever. If hell is judgment on what is wrong, it cannot be pleasant at all. But the second reserves hell for the extreme evildoers, doesn't it? The worst of the worst. But the question is, where do you draw the line? At what point does something or someone become the worst of the worst? See, Jesus had something different to say. He wasn't afraid of talking about hell, but given his goodness, that shouldn't surprise us. Goodness must hate what is evil, otherwise it just doesn't care. But Jesus didn't talk about the worst of the worst of a kind of sliding scale, a tipping point where someone becomes really bad. No, he spoke of a God who made us and who loves us and who gives us life and breath and this world to enjoy. And he asked us, what is our response to him? How have we treated God? Have we honored and loved him as we should? Or have we chosen our own way and so rejected the God of all goodness? Because Jesus said, if we've done that, we'll see the results in our behavior and in our thinking. We'll see selfishness creeping in. We'll see a lack of kindness towards others, even those closest to us. We'll see a laziness that puts ourselves first. We'll see a desire for recognition and respect that feels resentment or fear when someone else succeeds. we'll see the kind of things that I see in myself day after day. And you see, if God is going to be good and he's going to care about evil, then he must care about all evil. He must care about what I do wrong, much as I'd rather that he ignored it. Much as I'd be quick to point out that I'm not as bad as him or as her, not looking at anyone in particular, or as them. You see, I'd prefer a sliding scale because I'm quite confident it would stop just short of me. But if I want God to care about evil, then sooner or later the finger will be pointed at me. Which means that when Jesus speaks about hell, and he does, it begins to make for uncomfortable reading. Now sometimes Christians give the impression that they are the ones pointing the finger at others. They're threatening them with the reality of hell. And if you've experienced that sense of superiority from someone calling themselves a Christian, then I'm sorry. Because there's no room for finger pointing at others. Because the reality is that we are all in the same boat. None of us are perfect, and all of us fall short. The finger points at me. The finger points at all of us. And Jesus warned of the reality of God's judgment against evil, against me. But he also spoke of the wonderful offer of rescue, of forgiveness, of life. See, fans of football teams don't have posters on their walls commemorating great relegations, with scenes of players and fans in tears, looks of forlorn despair, images of failure. No, they have images of cup wins and of league triumphs, images of success. Which begs the question, why Christians celebrate a cross and the death of Jesus? Now don't get me wrong, they celebrate his resurrection too, but there's no getting away from the fact that the symbol of the Christian faith is a cross, a method of barbarous execution, of failure. But Jesus described that death as his very purpose, of him giving his life as a ransom for many. The Bible describes the cross as God's judgment on evil, as God the Father removed his presence from God the Son. It was hell on earth for Jesus. But Jesus had done nothing wrong, you see. But he took what we deserved, hell itself, so that we could be forgiven, so that we might have life. See, God does care about evil. He cares enough to condemn it, to give it the justice that it deserves, and that's a good thing, but it leaves us, all of us, in need of rescue from that justice, of rescue from hell itself. And amazingly, God offers us that rescue because he loves you and me, the people who mess up, who reject him, who ignore him. And he loves us enough to take the punishment that we deserve by his death on the cross. He offers us a way, if we will take it, to deal with the guilt that we feel for all those things that we've done wrong. He offers us forgiveness if we will just ask him. And he offers us a relationship with him as our loving Father and as our King. Which puts the ball very firmly in our court. What will we do with that offer? If you want to find out some more, do chat to a friend who's a Christian or come and talk to me afterwards. Or take away one of the free gospels that you've got and you can read more about who Jesus is and what he said and about his death on the cross. But thanks for listening and enjoy the rest of your evening.